him.
He would have been secure till his second death had he not defiled the bier. The day of judgment occurred, the grave opened, and he was thrown out with ignominy, but ignominy unpublished. The august influences, by simple cash and for their own sakes, had saved him from exposure and a jury. In order to get rid of him, his protectors spoke well of him, emphasizing his many good qualities, and he was deported to the Five Towns, properly enough since his grandfather had come thence, and there joined the staff of Batchgrew and Sons, thanks to the kind intervention of Mrs. Maldon. At the end of a year, John Batchgrew told him to go, and told Mrs. Maldon that her grandnephew had a fault. Mrs. Maldon was very sorry. At this juncture, Louis Forres, without intending to do so, would certainly have turned Mrs. Maldon's last years into a tragedy, had he not in the very nick of time inherited about £1,000. He was rehabilitated. He had money now. He had a fortune. He had £10,000. He had any sum you like, according to the caprice of rumour. He lived on his means for a little time, frequenting the Municipal School of Art at the Wedgwood Institute at Bursley, and then old Batchgrew had casually suggested to Mrs. Maldon that there ought to be an opening for him with Jim Horrocleave, who was understood to be succeeding with his patent special processes for earthenware manufacture. Mr. Horrocleave, a man with a chin, would not accept him for a partner, having no desire to share profits with anybody, but on the faith of his artistic tendency and Mrs. Maldon's correct yet highly misleading catalogue of his virtues, he took him at a salary, in return for which Louis was to be the confidential employee who could and would do anything, including design. And now Louis was the step-nephew of a lieutenant-general, a man of private means and of talent, and a trusted employee with a fine wage, all under one skin. He shone in Bursley, and no wonder. He was very active at Horrocleave's. He not only designed shapes for vases, and talked intimately with Jim Horrocleave about fresh projects, but he controlled the petty cash. The expenditure of petty cash grew, as was natural in a growing business. Mr. Horrocleave soon got accustomed to that, and apparently gave it no thought, signing checks instantly upon request. But on the very day of Mrs. Maldon's party, after signing a check and before handing it to Louis, he had somewhat lengthily consulted his private cash-book, and as he handed over the check, had said, "Let's have a squint at the petty cash-book tomorrow morning, Louis." He said it gruffly, but he was a gruff man. He left early. He might have meant anything or nothing. Louis could not decide which, or rather, from 5 o'clock to seven, he had come to alternating decisions every 5 minutes. Part 2. It was just about at the time when Louis ought to have been removing his paper cuff shields in order to start for Mrs. Maldon's that he discovered the full extent of his debt to the petty cash box. He sat